that Fair's First District recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Thank you very much. With that, we will move on to the presentation calendar. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. Supervisor Ovett will be here. There apparently was not his accident. He was not in it. But there was an accident on Highway 101, and he was tied up in traffic. So he'll be here as soon as he can get here. With that, if District Attorney Gerald Shea, Cindy Marie Absey, and Kelly Wilson would come to the podium. Thank you. This is a resolution proclaiming the week of April 10th through 16th, 2005, as San Luis Obispo County Crime Victims Rights Week. And the following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas President Ronald W. Reagan first declared National Crime Victims Rights Week in 1981 to focus our nation's attention on the plight of crime victims. And whereas this national silver anniversary of National Crime Victims Rights Week provides a national opportunity to reflect on the devastating impact of crime and terrorism on victims and our entire nation, and to strengthen our national resolve to ensure that victims' needs are identified and addressed. And whereas in 1981, the crime victim assistance field has expanded from a handful of assistance programs to include over 10,000 community and justice system-based programs. And in 2005, there are more than 32,000 federal and state statutes that define and protect victims' rights. And whereas America has joined together annually for the past 25 years to recognize the needs and rights of crime victims and survivors during National Crime Victims Rights Week each April. Therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does proclaim the week of April 10th to 16th, 2005, as San Luis Obispo County Crime Victims Rights Week and reaffirms our commitment to work to bring rights and justice to crime victims and our entire community. And if you would like to make some comments, please.
Good morning. Jerry Shea, District Attorney. Madam Chair, members of the Board, thank you very much for this proclamation declaring this week to be Victims' Rights Week in San Luis Obispo County. As you probably know, on a national level, our country is about 230 years old, and during about 200 of those years, the area of criminal justice has focused pretty much on crime and punishment. It's only been the last 25 or 30 years that we've actually concerned ourselves with the area of victims' rights. 3 years ago, our Victims Witness Division was celebrated for 25 years of service to this community. We had a celebration out in front of the courthouse steps. And just last week, the Victims Witness Division was celebrated and recognized by the governor and other state officials down at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley for 25 years of excellence and commitment to victims' rights. As a matter of fact, I think probably former Governor Wilson, who spoke to the group, summed it up best when he said that victims' advocates are not simply a convenience anymore. They're actually a necessity in terms of a criminal justice system. So I think I agree with that completely. And at the meeting last week, Cindy Marie Absey received a proclamation also from the governor. She's here today and would like to say a few words.
Thank you so much, and a special welcome to our new supervisors. It is an honor to be here, and a big thank you for this proclamation again this year. I know you've seen me, those of you that have been around for a while, for many years. This is my 22nd year in crime victim services, and I'm joined in longevity by many of my staff who have been here almost as long as I have, working day after day for crime victims, ensuring that justice is not served until crime victims are. That's the theme of this year's Crime Victims Rights Week. We have a short and wonderful DVD that we'd like to show you that was also shown at the Reagan Library event, and I'll let Kelly turn that on.
Here it comes. So we can have it on both. There we go. And then the lights turn down.
The innocent victims of crime have frequently been overlooked by our criminal justice system, and their pleas for justice have gone unheeded, and their wounds, personal, emotional, and financial, have gone unattended.
Step back and rewind and think about what the climate was in the 70s.
The criminal justice system supported the defendants and ignored and mistreated victims.
We treated victims like fingerprints, evidence.
The judge, he said, I have no room in my court for your emotional outburst.
For 6.5 weeks, I stood outside a courtroom door, literally with my nose pressed against the pane of glass.
Those are the things we can never, ever forget.
The time has come when we as a free people should face up to some hard decisions about crime.
We went around the country and had hearings on victims of crime. We'd have breakfast with them, we'd have dinners. We never stopped listening to their stories.
I always said, this is never going to happen to me.
He said, I have a gun. Give me your money, old man.
One minute I was there, and the next minute I was gone. I didn't know what was happening to me.
I had my only son murdered. I was an angry man.
It was a time of passion, a time of learning.
I was rear-ended by a drunk driver, and I suffered burns over 95% of my body.
Individual citizens laid themselves open and exposed themselves and their pain in order to get things done.
Our task force on victims of crime called the neglect and mistreatment of crime victims a national disgrace. What we have to do now is move forward to correct this disgrace.
As we listened to the victims, we certainly got a sense of what was going to work and what wasn't.
Without those funds, I never would have been able to get out there for these trials and sentencings that were really very important to me.
We worked for a decade getting the law enforcement, getting hospital personnel to even just let us hold the victim's hand.
We got bigger, we got better. Prosecutors' offices, police departments have advocates. They never had that before.
Achieving credibility and maintaining a vision and not departing from that vision was the greatest challenge. It was also our greatest achievement.
Together, I'm confident that we can begin to make America safe again.
It's night and day from the way it was 25 years ago. We got real good laws, but enforcing that in reality, that's the millennium challenge.
Holy cow, about a third of the building has been blown away.
We have to keep the programs going that are there. We have to create new ones. We have to make more programs to reach more victims. My dream is that one day, victims' rights and victim services will be so ingrained that it will be as naturally applied as the rights of those accused or convicted of crime.
I will die remembering the face of a young advocate who said, you didn't deserve it. That changed my life. And that happens on a daily, daily basis within our field.
Yes, we have come a long way, and we still have miles to go before we sleep. So as those of us that have been on the pioneering edge of crime victim services are sort of coming into the end of our work years here, it's time to prepare to pass the torch to the new guard. And as part of our new guard, victim witness programs, including ours, works with interns and volunteers every year. Since July of 2004, our volunteers and interns contributed 2,170 hours of volunteer work to working with crime victims, and that's, as you know, more than a full-time position. So that's quite a bit. And I'd like to invite one of our volunteers, Kelly Wilson, to the podium to say just a few quick words to you today. You. Kelly?
Good morning. I have this opportunity today because I've been given the chance to help victims of crime in San Luis Obispo County. It's been one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. I've had many jobs, and none have had this much impact on my life than this job, I guess you can say. It's not really a job so much as an experience, a mission to me. I've learned a lot, and that's why I'm here. I'm learning every day. I'm learning new things. I'm learning a lot about our criminal justice system. And one of the most important things I've learned about it is that it's just that. It's a system like others that have its imperfections and complexities. And working with victims and trying to explain the system to them when it works and try to help them accept it when it doesn't work, that is a very big challenge for me, myself. There are many types of victims I've learned. I've worked with a lot of them. Some victims never see the defendant. Some victims encounter the defendant the first time when they're victimized, and other victims, they may have lived their lives, loved, shared their home with the victims for 30 years or more. So there are very, very many victims, and they all kind of share the same emotions, fear, anger, confusion, and it's a confusing system, and that's what we try to help them understand as we understand it. It is crucial to help the victims of crimes in this county. We are a small county compared to other counties across the nation, but last year over 24 million victims in the nation were helped by centers like ours. So small centers can contribute to helping victims of crime, and I'm very proud to be a part of it and working with a great group of people that have helped me along the way and learn a lot about myself through this process, victims, defendants, the criminal justice system, and helping the district attorneys prosecute these cases so that we can find sentences that fit the defendants and serve the victims at the same time. That is very important to me, and I hope that we can continue this effort and bring in more interns as time goes on, because every hour that I spend at this site, at this job, at this mission, I have improved my life, and I'm hoping that I am helping the lives of others. Thank you for this opportunity, and thanks for accepting our proclamation.
And
thank you again for today, and as a memento of today's events, Aaron will be distributing some little gift bags for you.
Okay.
Thank you again.
Thank you for a very moving presentation. Thank you.
And while she's doing that, congratulations to you upon receiving recognition, being recognized by the governor, and thanks for all your crew that's who are here.
All
the hard work.
And if I could just have everyone in the audience that works is affiliated with Victim Witness stand, please. There's a group of us.
Thank you. I have one request to speak form on the presentation, if Reverend C. Height. And then we have some comments from the board after that. There's yellow forms in the back of the room in the and you will have 3 minutes.
Yes. I'm Reverend C. Height, public advocate, and I'd like to thank everyone that's here today from the District Attorney's Office. I became a victims advocate in 1977, and as it was my plan to retire in San Luis Obispo County, I chose to leave the Sacramento area after becoming a police informant on white supremacist gang activity in our neighborhood. And before this case could come to trial, it required time to investigate, and all the children of the neighborhood were actually threatened with death by a gang leader who was 6'6" and already on probation. We were in terror, and
you're 6'7". Excuse me.
My disabled son was not able to testify. He was terrorized. And so I moved to the county. And the county was not receptive. The county had a public health crisis, numerous crises, and the county was not receptive to people that were literally refugees trying to make a better life, trying to have improved disability and live in a manner where we were not terrorized because of our diversity. I have concerns about the Victim Witness Program and its equitable distribution of information in this county. A year ago, I spoke to this point, and I didn't find ready access to the victim witness information at the district attorney's office. I don't feel that I can go to the district attorney's office and try again. I find it inhospitable because I did file a complaint just to make it a matter of record through your county administrator, and I must say I have dissatisfaction with how the complaint was resolved. Simply because I was talking about equitable provision of services, there was an affirmative action process, and it was not referred to the affirmative action process. In addition, in response to my concerns, and this was for a woman who has now lost her housing as a victim witness, she was in close proximity to the crime and she knew the victim. She has lost her housing, and the information that was not presented was she was a qualified person. Now, I'd like to ask the district attorney, will you please have my subpoena sent downstairs, because the grand jury, I understand, wants to talk to me, and I don't feel that the office is hospitable. I don't feel like being the subject of remarks about dogs, wheelchairs, she walks, she doesn't walk. I have improved disability. My goals are still on track, a little delayed. But I want you to consider that there are independent advocates, there are people that are not part of the system, and please support all of your victim witnesses. You know, put the brochure in the mail. It would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. With that, I have, are there any comments from board members? Yes, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Crime victims suffer once, and I think we should do everything that we can to see that they don't continue to suffer. And I just want to thank the staff and especially all the volunteers that work to ease the pain of crime victims. So thank you very much.
Mr. Lenthal.
Yes, I'd also like to thank Cindy and her staff. And Cindy, I guess we're both one of those volunteers, because I remember when you started 25 years ago, and I also remember when we didn't have this program working in local law enforcement. The saying, the difference of daylight and dark, I think is probably best summed up, that it's remarkable the work that you people have done the last 25 years and how this has been a constant battle to improve and work with limited budgets and resources. And I commend you and your staff and your volunteers, and I encourage the interns to look forward to a rewarding career, because I think it is a lifestyle. It is something where you feel like you make a difference, and I've seen firsthand where you people make a difference every day, and I commend you for it.
Okay. I have no other request to speak. Lights from the board members, so once again, thank you very much for all the tremendous work that you do. Thank you. With that, we will move on to the public comment period, and this is the time for members of the public to address the board on issues that are not on the agenda for this day and over which we have some control. The first speaker is, and I'll call two names The first one can come to the one microphone, and the second name then will go to the next microphone, and it saves time. The first one is Larry, and I never can pronounce the last name.
Verheilig.
Thank you. And the second name is Bob Dougherty.
Good morning, Chairwoman Bianchi and members of the board. And I am Larry Verheilig. My address is 950 Waypoint Drive in the community of Nipomo. I am speaking at this point on the proposed negative declaration for the Los Barrios area, specifically the Sahara, if I pronounce that correctly, GPA, which is a request to rezone a 1.5-acre parcel of a 30-acre agricultural parcel from agricultural to rural residential. That's not in concert with Title 22. Although this is outside of the Nipomo Mesa hydrologic subarea, if this goes forward and sets a precedence, there's many 5-acre parcels on the Nipomo Mesa that are zoned RR, and if these were also allowed to rezone in a similar manner, then the withdrawal of the water from our groundwater basin would be significantly increased. As you know, NCSD, the Nipomo Community Services District, is party to ongoing litigation. We're in the settlement phase. Hopefully that'll be completed sometime in my lifetime. But with that said, since we are not overlying users, we are purveyors, it will become the burden of the community ratepayers to offset the increase in the pumping of the groundwater by finding other supplemental water costs, supplemental water supplies, and they will most assuredly be at a higher price than what is the current. With that said, when this does come before the board, I want you to take that into consideration, that this is not the way to go and could have significant impacts. And thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Bob Dougherty, followed by Reverend C. Height.
My name is Bob Dougherty. I'm with American Star Tours. I appeared before the Slocog Board on a rail feeder service of Amtrak. And now your staff is telling me they're going to go and ask you to change that. You know, tomorrow, the next day, the Slorta staff or the Slocog staff. I'd like you to imagine for a minute that you all own a service station in your locale, wherever you're from. You have you're very proud of your service station. It's top drawer. People in the community support it. It has the ADA approval. It's probably the showplace, each one of your communities. Across the street or down the block, State of California buys a service station. They take that service station and they put on the sign for state vehicles only. Their price is $1 a gallon. Your price is $2.50 a gallon. And then they say, well, we're doing real well. Let's make that all state agencies, state governments, county governments vehicles. They can fill here. $1 a gallon, you're across the street at $2.50 a gallon. Pretty soon they say, well, God, we're doing so good. We've got so many customers. Let's open it up to everybody. Anybody that's an employee, anybody that has a family or touches in any way, a state employee, a county employee, a city employee, and they can get the gas for $1 a gallon. Of course, the law says you can't do this, but they do it anyhow. The next step is, they say, let's don't tell anybody. Let's make this a showplace for the state. We're going to open service stations in the entire state of California. We're doing so well. So they open it up to everybody. They don't check any IDs, any requirements to care who they are. Everybody lines up. Pretty soon you're bankrupt in your station. You've got no one to sell to if you're selling for $2.50 and they're selling for $1. But the catch is the $1.50 difference that you're not getting from them is being paid for by every one of us as a subsidy. This is the same thing that Amtrak is doing to Greyhound, to American Star, and other city carriers. They have a rule to go by. state law that tells them they can only allow a passenger to ride on the train that's going to be connected with a bus. Well, they're violating this daily throughout the state of California. And they have caused Greyhound to go to their knees by taking unauthorized passengers. And I'd like your support. I'll be here tomorrow. I hope I can get more than 10 minutes to go over it with the board then. I'd like to pass this out. Your staff is requiring us to go to an extreme. We're going to operate our own service in conjunction and in competition with Amtrak. If we don't, in a year we're out of business, we're bankrupt. Your staff has really put us in a bind. So I'd like to pass this out now. Thank you.
And thank you for your comment.
Yeah, that's not your staff here I meant. That's the Slocum.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Reverend C. Height, followed by Eric Greeney.
I'm Reverend C. Height, public advocate. I'm available today to receive my subpoena from the grand jury. I asked the county council to write my instructions on a piece of paper so I might locate the grand jury's office. Please phone the DA and ask them to serve me before I leave today. I find the DA's office inhospitable to non-attorneys, ordinary citizens, disabled persons, and their associates, and therefore continuing to seek services or going to the DA's office is no longer an option for me. The following is a letter that I have mailed to the grand jury. R.E. Subpoena. I am known as a public advocate who has attempted to level the playing field in San Luis Obispo County by filing concerns, complaints, and requests for accommodation. I am a professional complainant, not a litigant. On October 25, 2004, I placed and locked an open letter to the grand jury on an international civil rights forum. I continued to work through belligerent county processes which treated the advocate as an adversary, exhausting all remedy. On Thursday, March 17, 2005, the county became reasonably aware that I considered the grand jury as an option. The county's awareness has not improved communication. The county may be confused in its responsibility to provide equitable communication and services. I have now received a message that the grand jury wants to talk to me. The county affirmative action coordinator has confirmed this, but provided no contact number. Please contact me with an appointment time so that I may either receive my subpoena from the grand jury or appear to testify. My accommodation is known to be email, as I am disadvantaged by verbal communication and do not maintain a landline. I would like to know why the subpoena was not confidential and specifically how it came to the attention of the county administrator's office. Please be advised I have a formal complaint against this office, the Sheriff's Department, and the Office of the District Attorney of San Luis Obispo County, and must refrain from having contact with employees of the DA. Please advise me how I may assist you and meet my public obligation in this matter of subpoena without suffering undue advantage. Disadvantage. And is it possible to just get, if there is an office that I can go to, is it possible to just have this written on a note for me so that I can do that? Or have the DA send someone down before I leave the building?
I'm not sure what the process is on this one. I know where the grand jury office is.
Can someone just write that down for me?
During the break, we'll do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Eric Greening, followed by Jesse Arnold.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and although I have another topic, I endorse in advance what Jesse Arnold is going to say, because I think I know what it will be. About a month ago, we had the culminating session in the Vision 2050 project, and it was determined that in some form the process was to continue. What I'm here to ask today is that as it continues, the county recognize that the future is not the sole concern of land use and transportation planners. Health, social services, agriculture, and many other departments have as great a stake. We can't pretend that in the year 2050, our society will only be made up of the healthy and the rational. The vulnerable will be among us, likely in greater proportions than before. For example, unless we control our addiction to pesticides and other toxics, most people will have been exposed to endocrine disruptors while in utero, with grave consequences in health, behavior, and cognitive functioning. With wildlife similarly affected, the ecosystem could be unraveling, particularly given the pressure of climate change. How are we preparing for this, or better, to avoid it? One current trend is a fast rising percentage of children with autism. If we don't identify and control the source, which may be environmental, we'll have to look at how our culture will have to shift to accommodate this trend. Perhaps our infatuation with acceleration will have to be replaced by a commitment to slowness as a virtue, to reducing the sensory overload in which most current residents are immersed. Progress as quietness. Imagine that. In 1960, half the country had legally enforced segregation, and 4 years later, California voters would support discrimination in housing. People smoked everywhere, hospitals, schools, restaurants. Coastal communities pumped sewage into the ocean. How will our knowledge and our values change in the next 45 years? We need to look as far outside the box as we can, and we are more likely to do so if a broader variety of perspectives are included in the dialogue. Caseworkers, the disabled, organic farmers, children, artists, clergy, heretics. What can we do to cast a wider net so that the visioning isn't the same people talking to themselves? How do we involve the whole community? I ask you to put your heads together to work toward that goal. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Eric. Jesse Arnold, followed by Wendy, I think it's Deesh.
Harry, could you move that bag there? It's blocking the light. I won't know when the light's turning red. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Bianchi and members of the board. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I'm here to invite you all to come down to Earth Day at Mission Plaza on Saturday, April 23rd. Also, I'd like to talk a little more about genetic engineering. I'd like to ask the board to put genetic engineering on the agenda and make three requests to Congress. And those would be labeling of genetically engineered crops, end patenting of seeds, and three, have some antitrust action. On labeling, we talked about this last week. A vast majority of people, whether they want to eat Frankenfoods or not, would like to have the item labeled so they can choose. And as far as patenting, for most of our history, there was no patenting of seeds. This is a big mistake. It should not ever have happened. Somehow the biotech industry got to the patent office. It wasn't passed by Congress at all. Congress was out of the loop. They need to step up to the plate and look at this issue, and there should be no patenting. Now, the biotech industry is very two-faced on this issue. They have million-dollar promotions giving you glittering generalities about the wonders of biotech, but when it comes to labeling, if it's so great, why don't they want it labeled? Well, they don't, because they know people would not buy it. And then also they would know that people could track what they'd been eating, and then the companies would be held responsible if something went wrong. So they can't have it both ways. If it's so special that it deserves a patent, it's got to be labeled. I think we need labeling and no patenting. And as far as antitrust, we're down to five main companies that are controlling the biotech industry. They're very aggressively going out to buy up the seed industry. An example is Monsanto this year bought out a huge seed company based in Oxnard, a multi-billion dollar deal. Well, I appeal to my friends in agriculture who think they're going to be for this. Is it in farmers' advantage to have five companies controlling all the seeds for our primary crops? This is where we're headed. We consumers can boycott corn and soy. These are the two they've got so far. The wheat farmers and the rice farmers have said no to biotech. So we can buy those grains rather than corn, and buy all the other kinds of beans rather than soybeans. Consumers need to flex their muscles, tell the biotech people, we don't want it. And just as an end note, nobody has answered my challenge. I want evidence of a long-term study showing the safety of BT corn. Still, nobody said a word. Glittering generalities when it comes down to what's really been proven, nothing. Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse. Genetically engineered crops, I guess you could say, will be on the agenda when we have the reports from the Agricultural Task Force and from the Health Commission Task Force. And then we will have the items on the agenda. But until then, I think it would be inappropriate to do so. But we will have them then. Wendy? And I,
hello.
I don't want to mispronounce your last name again.
My name is Wendy Dish.
Oh, I said it right.
I am a resident of San Luis Obispo, a civil engineer EIT, geographer in water resources management, and a LEED accredited professional. Recently, some apartments had a fire, and the kitchen was gutted. Thanks to the quick thinking of the and cooperation of the residents and quick response of the professionals of the fire department, the damage was contained. Most important, though, is that everyone was safe and is safe. Now, the repairs. The insulation will be replaced with recycled denim insulation. The floors will be restored to Douglas fir. We'll use Marmoleum, an agri-based flooring made of, from rapidly renewable products, and PET carpet, made from recycled plastic products. The cabinets will be made from EcoColors, an FSC-certified M3-grade particle board, wheat board, and I'll be happy to pass these around, which is made from recycled wheat chaff and has the same applications as particle board, FSC wood, certified wood, and recycled glass panes. The paints will be free of volatile organic compounds to protect the air quality of not only the workers but the occupants as well. I am a member of Slow Green Build, a recently formed organization that promotes sustainability in the building industry. Sustainability, sustainable development meets the needs of the present without compromising the future generation's ability to meet their own needs. So Slow Green Build promotes sustainable building techniques that minimize construction waste, build healthier homes, and reduce energy use while conserving natural resources. Help provide architects, engineers, contractors, developers, and other building professionals with the proper tools to build sustainable projects, and supports and helps develop public policy with advocates for sustainable architecture, social, and building practices. You have been invited to participate in a workshop with David Johnston, one of the co-authors of Green Programs in Alameda County, Boulder, Colorado, among others. He has agreed to spend some time with us tomorrow morning on his way to Santa Barbara, and I am here to remind you of this very important meeting, 10 o'clock tomorrow, and to encourage your participation and involvement. And if you can't be there, please send a representative. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. That's my last request to speak forum on public comment. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak? That I will on public comment.
Yes, on the block grant.
With that, I will close it to the public for public comment, and we will move on to the consent agenda. And now is the time for the public to speak on consent. And I have a request to speak form on item B4, Larry Verheilig, and followed by Eric Greeny.
Yes, good morning, Chairwoman Bianchi. Again, members of the board. I am Larry Verheilig, still reside at 950 Waypoint Drive in the community of Napomo. Item number B4 is AB 1590, which is a legislative bill that would reduce the amount that the state will raid, use the term, property taxes from the county. And I want to voice my support for that. As you know, the California Special Districts Association, through a lot of effort, was very successful in getting Proposition 1A passed, which also limited the amount of property tax revenues that were removed from special districts. And I'm looking forward to your success. But remember that the dragon will not be slayed. At this point in time, there is AB 1259 going through the process, which would reward qualified cities with extra property taxes. And these qualified cities would be those that are successful in building a certain amount of, quote, workforce housing, if you want to call it that way, of which the source of these extra property tax funds would come from both dependent and independent special district associations, as well as other agencies within counties in the affected areas. So you need to keep your armor on and your shield shined and sword sharpened. And with that, I want to leave you with a quote from Mark Twain, which is very applicable to this in many situations. Life, limb, and property are not secure as long as the legislature is in session. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Greening, followed by Reverend C. Height.
I'm Eric Greening, mostly on B13, but I just want to follow up on Mr. Verheilig's concerns, which I share. And I would welcome a similar sort of agenda item of legislative update slash progress report as you just had with the COG. There is a confusing welter of legislation tracking that affects county government and county services. And I think it would be a good idea to see what positions the county is assumed to be taking based on the platform you adopted at the beginning of the year, and what further actions we might need to take. Anyway, on B13, I'm glad to see that you're working to restore the interrupted transit service serving Shandon. Given that the unmet need was identified 9 years ago, it was unconscionable that the service ended up being interrupted for so long. So thank you for this restoration. I do find one detail requires clarification. First call on the senior services for seniors and handicapped. However, what is called limited lifeline service is being offered to the whole community. On page B13.5, it's unclear wording in paragraph 1B, which reads, quote, limited lifeline service requires a minimum of 2 round trips to the Paso Robles area at least 2 days per week, unquote. Upon whom is this requirement exacted? Is Ride-On following the Vanpool model where the user is required to subscribe at least 2 days a week, or the fixed route public transit model where regularly scheduled service would be provided to the general public at least 2 days a week? I hope it's the latter, even if reservations would need to be made the previous day to ensure that no one would drive an empty bus. Until or unless full service is provided 5 days a week, such that a full work day in Paso Robles is accommodated, most trips to town will not be regular recurring commutes, but episodic trips to the doctor, shopping, library, luncheon meetings, or what have you. Will the lifeline hours be workers 8 to 5 or the medical and shoppers more 10 to 4 type thing? I would hope that in the summer the youth of Shandon could use this service to access to recreational, educational, and social opportunities, but it will work best if it does not require a Vanpool's loyalty to regular recurring use. The virtue of fixed route service is that you can try it once without making a month's commitment. In such a way, new riders are more easily attracted. I hope these riders are attracted and that the service you are restoring will grow to meet the rising need. And I remember that Harry pointed out young people are more and more found in the outlying communities, so the transit service needs to reflect it. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Reverend C. Height, and that's my last consent agenda request to speak for.
Well, I heard elder disabled in Shandon, and I understand that's B13. Thank you, Eric. I don't think this should be an afterthought. I think that you should congratulate yourself. I understand that you're all on the transportation board, and I've complained for 2 years. I've been here for 2 years trying to improve conditions for the elderly and the disabled, and I think that you really should congratulate yourself for putting this through, because it is a terribly frightening to be infirmed. I simply was, you know, people are actually amazed since I was able to get off of pain medications. I really was an invalid for a number of years. I really moved around very slowly, was very slow in my thought processes, and it is very frightening to be homebound and not be able to just get yourself to the doctor, not just get yourself to the emergency room for a blood test, have to rely on an ambulance. That's very frightening, to have strangers coming into your home, trying to explain when you're really having difficulty speaking, what the problem is, basically advocating and lobbying for your health care, you know, on the spot and under bad conditions. And I really want you to feel good about yourselves for doing this, because what we're talking about is that if a person can get to the doctor, they can stave off disability, they could stave off permanent disability, they could improve disability. And disability is expensive, and you have a public health care and a human services crisis, and the county is really not prepared to take on this expense. And so you've done a really wonderful thing, and I want you to really feel good about that, and I really appreciate it. Thank you
very much for your comments. With that, I will close it to the public for public comment.
Mark Sullivan's here to respond to item B13.
Good. And we also have item B4 that I would like an explanation on. So, Mark, you're up there, so you might as well go for it.
Madam Chair, members of the board, my name is Mark Sullivan. I'm an administrator with the Public Works Department. And to address Eric Greening's comments on the reinstitution of the Shandon shuttle, that we're calling it now, I think this is a great opportunity to get the word out. Just a brief history on what had happened. As Eric had mentioned, that we had been running a Shandon senior van service for a number of years based on the unmet transit needs that had been identified. With the growth out there, it had gotten to the point where they were just not able to handle the ridership requirements, and so we were unable to make sure that it was running in compliance with all of the federal and state laws, and so we had to terminate the service. Unfortunately, we didn't have an opportunity to get something in place before we terminated it. It was terminated approximately a month ago. Since then, we've been working with a couple of the transportation providers in the community, and Ride-On has agreed with its agreement that we're asking you to ratify today to provide the services out to Shandon on what we're calling a deviated fixed route. So it's kind of a hybrid of what Mr. Greening was speaking of and what we're planning on doing, and we hope that this is going to change over time depending on how the ridership goes. But initially, we're going to be providing services 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we are going to be working with the community to see if that is something that is going to work out. It might be Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. But right now, to begin, it's going to be Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you'll be able to go in the morning, and we're going to have a drop-off at the health community area in Paso Robles, and then at the shopping center, and then also we'll be able to go down to Templeton to the health area there, so that there will be availability for people to see the doctor. That seemed to be the overriding pressing need at this particular point in time. Eric is correct in that it's not going to be a fixed route. What we are going to do is have the person that is in need of the ride call up. We're going to get the word out here shortly, and they will be able to make rides in advance. We'll try to accommodate them on the day of the ride, but we're hoping that they will be able to call a day previous. And depending on whether or not there is a demand for ridership, if there isn't, then they won't be able to, we won't be actually providing a van out there with nobody riding on it, so you won't be seeing that. We're hoping to distribute the information within this week, and we've been moving quickly on this to replace the services that were terminated, and I'm hoping that I answered all your questions.
Number to call?
We're going to get that out. I don't have that with me right now at this point in time, unfortunately. And I will be getting that information out to everybody. We're going to be working with the advisory committee in Shandon, and we'll be having a press release here shortly.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Mr. Ovid has...
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify one other thing. It's not a demand on the ridership that they be Lifeline, that they're not signing up for anything.
No.
What that contract says, that's what the minimum will be provided by Ride-On, so that at least one day or twice a week, morning and afternoon, there will be transportation at minimum. And then we're basing it on how it picks up.
And I think that's an important point, is that that's the minimum at this particular point in time. And so we're going to see how this evolves over time so that we can meet the community's needs out there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Patterson, do you have any items?
Just a comment on B10, which is a contract between Behavioral Health and Catalyst Consulting. Ms. Dale McGee, I'm familiar with the work that they've done, and I think the county will be well served by that arrangement.
Thank you. Mr. Lenthal, any items?
No.
Mr. Shajan.
See that so nicely. Thank you, none at this time.
I've got a lot of practice. and I have item B4, just for an explanation of item B4. Thank you, Will.
Madam Chairman, members of the board, I'm Will Clemens with the Public Works Department. And just to give you some background on item B4, support for Assembly Bill 1590. Last year, the local governments agreed to shift $1.3 billion towards the state budget in fiscal year 04-05 and 05-06 to help close the budget gap. Special districts were to contribute $350 million of that amount per year, or $700 million over the two-year period. The effect on your board's govern special districts is the loss of about $1.7 million per year, and more specifically, the loss of about 75% or $1.5 million of the county's flood control district property tax revenues. The formula used to allocate the property tax shift from special districts to the state was designed to pull more money from the districts that have the ability to raise rates, or the enterprise districts. Agencies whose functions include non-enterprise services, such as flood control, were to pay a smaller share of their property tax revenues to the state. But there was a technical flaw in the implementing legislation, which caused agencies that perform both enterprise and non-enterprise functions to have their activities assessed at the higher enterprise rate. So this has had a large impact on the flood control district non-enterprise revenues. Assembly Bill 1590 will correct this inequitable situation for fiscal year 05-06, and it specifies that agencies that perform both enterprise and non-enterprise functions will not pay more than they would if they were treated as separate entities. This would not result, or this would result in the amount shifted to the state from your board-governed special districts being reduced by about $700,000 next year. And this bill is supported by the Water Resource Advisory Committee, Flood Control Zone 3 and 9 advisory committees, and the Nacimiento Commission.
Thank you very much. I think the general public really needs to know that, how will I phrase it, that we run our county very efficiently, and if the state would stop taking our money, we could do it even better. With that.
Madam Chair, one clarification of what Will said when he said that local government agreed to shift $1.3 million. That's kind of agreed in the same way that the bride and groom agree to get married when there's a loaded shotgun pointed at them.
Yeah, but not for the same reason.
Well, that's true. Thank you. I was trying to think of something, but Harry said it much better.
That's all I'm going to say.
With that, I would entertain
Jim, Jim has B10.
No, I'll make a motion for the consent
group
as the added item.
I just
I thought Mr. Patterson asked for B10.
Just a comment.
Second, Mr. Owitz.
And this includes the added item B13. Okay. May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. And with that, we will return at 10:15 because we have a lot of requests to speak forms, and this board needs to take a break, and we'll be able to listen to everyone much more comfortably. Thank you. May we have an introduction of item C1, please?
Item C1 is a hearing to consider approval of the 2005 Consolidated Plan and Action Plan of the San Luis Obispo Urban County for the Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, Home Investment Partnership Act, HOME, Emergency Shelter Grant, ESG, and the American Dream Down Payment Initiative, ADDI, programs, and proposed amendments to the 1995, 1996, 1997, 1998, 1999, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, and 2004 action plans. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Thank you. We have a staff report, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chairman.
You have to almost swallow that microphone, otherwise we can't hear you.
Thank you. Tony Navarro, Department of Planning and Building. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board, ladies and gentlemen. Well, today we're here to talk about the 2005 Consolidated Plan and 2005 Action Plan.
You're not swallowing it. You're not.
A little closer. Okay.
Yeah.
There we go. I do have a couple amendments to the packet that I submitted to you earlier. The first one, it was a correction in the resolution, so that was submitted to the clerk for distribution. Also, an amendment to the draft 2005 Consolidated Plan, where I included the entire continuum of care as prepared by the San Luis Obispo County Housing Services Council, and that is a requirement by the federal regulations. So I thought I'd just put it in, which increased the document by 30-plus pages. So those are the revisions that you have before you. For the members of the public, I do have copies of the staff report and the consolidated plan over to my right, if anybody's interested in reviewing that. At this time, they're free to take some. I'll begin my presentation on trying to make this as quickly as possible. So you ask yourself, what is a consolidated plan? Well, it's a five-year plan that identifies a comprehensive strategy to address the county's housing and community development needs, establishes how federal funding resources will be used to meet those local needs, and as I mentioned, it is a five-year plan that extends to June 30th of 2010. There are three parts to the the consolidated plan. One first part describes programs, development of the plan, participation by the public, and of course the multi-jurisdictions, which are part of the urban county, which I'll mention right now, are the cities of Paso Robles, Atascadero, San Luis Obispo, Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, and of course the unincorporated county. Part two deals with housing and community needs assessment. Then we have the five-year strategy, which I will briefly touch on in a couple minutes. And then the annual action plans, which, again, there will be five action plans for the award or award of the funding programs that I mentioned. In the consolidated plan, the main purpose, one of the main purposes, is really to come up with strategies and priorities on how the urban county proposes to use the federal funds over the next 5 years. So there are strategies that are identified dealing with affordable housing, addressing homelessness, economic development, public facilities, and services. There are three priorities under the affordable housing strategy. The first is to increase availability of affordable and decent rental housing for low and moderate income persons. And there we've identified an objective of spending $4.6 million of CDBG and home funds to benefit 100 low and moderate income persons. Priority number two, increase first-time home ownership opportunities for low and moderate income households. And that would be a combination of three funding programs, home, CDBG, and the American Dream Down Payment Initiative. And there we hope to spend about $1.1 million for the benefit of 40 low and moderate income persons. The last priority under affordable housing is priority number three, maintain and upgrade existing neighborhoods and housing units occupied by low and moderate income households. And there we hope to allocate about $500,000, and that's the CDBG homes for the benefit of 60 persons. And that's more like a rehab project that would go on throughout the county. Then we come to the next strategy, which is addressing homelessness. And there we have two priorities. The first one, provide needed emergency shelter facilities and related services. And there we hope to allocate $1.3 million in CDBG funds, plus the entire allocation of the Emergency Shelter Grant Fund, which is about $460,000, to benefit 2,500 unduplicated, extremely low and low-income persons. So those extremely low numbers are really, you get to the homeless population at that point. Priority number two under addressing homelessness is to prevent homelessness by enabling people to obtain or retain decent, affordable housing and supportive services. And there we're looking at about $1.2 million in combined CDBG and home funds for the benefit of 590 low-income households. Our next strategy, economic development, we have two priorities but one objective. The first priority is to provide business technical assistance for small businesses to create and retain jobs. Priority number two, provide financial assistance to existing small businesses for expansion and to start up businesses. And there we're looking at about $250,000 for the next 5 years to create 150 jobs. Under our next strategy, public facilities and services, we have priority number one, which is to assist communities and neighborhoods that consist primarily of low and moderate income persons that cannot afford necessary public facilities and services. And there we're looking at the bulk of the CDBG funding at $7.3 million to benefit 100,000 persons throughout the county. Well, I've mentioned all these millions of dollars. So what exactly are we anticipating? Well, if the federal budget continues as it is, and I know there have been some proposals to practically eliminate the Community Development Block Grant Program, if we anticipate the current funding that the government, that Congress has allocated, which I think there is a hope of, we're looking at $11.9 million in CDBG funds, $7.1 in home funds, $461,000 in ESG funds, and $230,000 in the American Dream Down Payment Initiative. Now, under the Community Development Block Grant Program, there are three national objectives that each project must meet. The first ones that definitely benefit low and moderate income people. Number two, help prevent the elimination of slums and blight. For example, any project in a redevelopment area would be eligible. And the third national objective, which is to meet a particular urgent community development need, basically to eliminate the threat of a public safety or an emergency such as a natural disaster. Fortunately, we haven't had the need to use that. Now, who are the low and moderate income persons in the county? Well, basically, to be eligible for any of these funds, your income must be below 80% of the median income. If you're a low income person, that's 50% of the median income. For example, if you have a family of four, your median income right now, as established, is $61,700, and a low-income person would be $30,850. I won't go through the entire list of eligible activities, but for CDBG, there are housing activities that could benefit, for example, acquisition, rehab, public facilities, activities, infrastructure, neighborhood facilities, special needs projects, economic development. We can use 15% of our public or our funding towards public services, and that is a cap that we cannot exceed by federal requirements. And how much money will the urban county of San Luis Obispo receive in 2005? Well, right now HUD is showing $2,386,689 to the urban county, and it is divided up amongst the participating jurisdictions as presented in the presentation here. And the city councils have already taken action on their recommendations for that funding. Next, we come on to the home program, which was established in 1990. And you can have several activities under the home project, owner-occupied rehab, home buyer assistance, rental housing, tenant-based rental assistance, property acquisitions. And there we have some eligible activities, as I quickly mentioned. New construction is one of them, which is a fairly popular one. Home entitlement funds, we expect about $1.4 million in home funds, and the Board of Supervisors controls this amount of funding, and it could be allocated within any jurisdiction that participates in the urban county. So that does exclude the cities of Morro Bay and Pismo Beach unless they choose to participate within the next year. The Emergency Shelter Grant Program, we're expecting about $92,000. And again, the board controls that amount of funding, and the folks that are eligible, the organizations that are eligible to receive that funding, they get together. It's a collaborative effort, and they decide how to split up the money. So the recommendation that's before you is actually not staff's recommendation, but by those organizations that provide services to the homeless. The American Dream Down Payment Initiative. A small chunk there, $46,000 for a first-time home buyer program or rehabilitation project. And again, you must be 80% of the area median income. And the loans from the ADDIE program shall not exceed $10,000 or 6% of the purchase price of the home. And it works in conjunction with home funds, so we can combine those two funding programs together to make a few dreams possible. The 2005 action plan, I'm almost done here. The action plan identifies the intent of the upcoming year to meet the long-term goals of the consolidated plan. And so we have there the approval of the projects that we have recommended, and it also includes amendments of prior year action plans. And as the clerk mentioned, there are numerous years, most of those coming from the city of Atascadero, to draw down a significant amount of funding from prior year. And as we have available for the public, exhibits A and B, which have the draft recommendations from the county and from the cities, those are available for your review. And if you have any questions or comments, I'm available. And that ends my presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Tony. Are there any questions of staff? Okay, I see no lights, so I assume there are no questions at this time.
Let me just ask one, and I didn't get a chance to do it the other day, if I might, Madam Chair.
Sure, go ahead.
On the consolidated plan, the one you have, just out of curiosity, is page 14 and page 13, where you use the tracks, and you show the percentages.
14 and 13, oh, of the con?
Yeah, the
yes.
Title 9 and that, or Table 9.
Yes.
The interesting part is that the track at San Miguel Inn is that track 100.3, which is in the map on the adjacent, but it's not listed in any of these.
It's
considered in part of 103?
It is part of track 100. It is track 100, block 3. And if you look at the bottom of that graph, I did mention San Miguel.
Yeah.
It's sort of hidden. But, yeah, it is a predominantly low-income community.
Just why it wasn't in here, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the only question I have. So we will open it to the public. And for those of you who have never been here before, I call a name and then I call a second name. The first name can go to whichever microphone, and the second one will go to the opposite microphone. You have 3 minutes, and the lights are over here. And when the green light is on, you have 2 minutes. When the yellow light goes on, think about concluding, because when the red light goes on, you will conclude. So with that, I will open it to the public. First name I have, and these are in order that I received them. There's no preference particularly. Maurice Priest, followed by Elsie Dietz.
Madam Chair, members of the board, my name is Maurice Priest, and I'm representing a nonprofit housing corporation called Resident Owned Parks, and we're asking for your support of the home application submitted for the purchase of Sunny Oaks Mobile Home Park in Los Osos. And although this particular mobile home park is in Supervisor Bianchi's district, it's a worthy project that is worthy of your support, and I would hope that each of you might have the similar project in your own districts in the future. Of the existing affordable housing in San Luis Obispo County, there is nothing that's under more severe attack than the mobile home parks. The county has done its part for years in trying to preserve affordable rents with a mobile home ordinance, and as you know, some park owners are suing the county trying to make the ordinance go away, and they've threatened mobile homeowners with rent increases up to $1,100 per month. A year ago, we contacted Joan Kennedy Fox, the owner of Sunny Oaks, at the request of the residents of the park. She is a member of this community. She lives in Los Osos. Her parents originally developed Sunny Oaks in the mid-60s. She wanted to sell the park, was willing to sell to us, and she wanted to preserve it as affordable housing. That is an opportunity that just does not come along very often. I hope that that happens at the other parks. She could have picked up the telephone and called the park owner next door, MHC, that owns Sea Oaks and that's suing the county, and they could have written a check for her park. Big corporation based in Chicago, no mercy when it comes to rents. They're suing the county. And one phone call, she could have done that. She didn't want to do it. She said, if I can sell the park to a nonprofit and preserve affordable housing, I'm willing to do that. So Joan Fox and I both met with county staff starting a year ago and explained the situation. We're here hand in hand. Here's a park owner with a nonprofit representative for the residents, and said, when funding becomes available, what do you suggest, you know, without any guarantees of funding, what do you suggest is an appropriate request? And it was the suggestion, without any guarantees or obligations or promises from staff, that $400,000 to $600,000 would be appropriate given the purchase price of $3,750,000. So that's exactly what we applied for. It wasn't a number that I dreamed up and said, gee, let's get as much as we can from the county. That was a suggestion that was made. And of course, as you know, the staff, their initial recommendation did not approve funding. So we adjusted our numbers, came back, and our request, we've reduced our request for a home loan, not a grant, not a gift, a loan that would be repaid, to $75,000 to $100,000. And the reason that we've done that is that we also have applications pending with the State of California Department of Housing, and one of their important considerations is the project being supported by the county or city in which it's located? So a funding of $75,000 to $100,000 toward the purchase of Sunny Oaks will do an amazing amount of good for the people who already live there.
Thank you very much for your comments.
You're welcome.
The red light is on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Dietz.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board.
Followed by Mary Hart.
My name is Elsie Dietz, and I'm a 16-year resident of Los Osos. Almost every day, the local newspapers feature a news story, an editorial, a survey about the critical shortage of affordable housing in San Luis Obispo County. The articles talk about how the people who provide services for our daily living will no longer be able to live within traveling distance of their jobs. Seniors on fixed incomes will be denied the dignity of decent housing. Ideas for affordable housing address plans for some undetermined time in the future. All of them will require financial assistance from government or the private sector. In the meantime, the need for help increases. One solution that fits all the criteria for an affordable neighborhood is the mobile home park. already in existence, Sunny Oaks is a well-managed, friendly community of citizens with varying interests and backgrounds. It is presently privately owned and available for sale. With the county's help, it could be owned and managed by its residents. Without the county's help, it could be purchased by a large corporation, leaving the tenant's rent at the mercy of the owners. This is exactly what happened in the adjacent park, Sea Oaks, where in addition to purchasing the coach, rent on one older mobile was listed at $1,600 a month. Laguna Lakes in San Luis faces the same problem as Sea Oaks. Mobile home rent control ordinances are under attack in this county and statewide in federal courts. ROP, the nonprofit organization working with the residents toward a park purchase, has applied for a low-interest loan from the state. Participation by the county in the form of a low-interest home loan would significantly enhance the chance of a successful application for the state loan and through it, the completion of the sale. The county's investment in guaranteeing the future of these 65 already existing homes is a bargain. Please make it happen.
Thank you for your comments. Mary Hart, followed by Kayla Wilbur.
My name is Mary Hart. I'm a 16-year resident of Sunny Oaks Mobile Park in Los Osos. We are mostly low-income people there. It's been a very pleasant place and a very secure park, which is so important. And we have a real nice owner who is willing to sell it to us, and she's very supportive of our buying it. And at this time, we are here asking for your support in adjusting the funding recommendations so that a share of the home loan program funds can be directed to this worthy project. And evidence of a county buy-in for this project is a critical component in achieving our goal of becoming a resident-owned park. And we just ask your cooperation and attention in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. Kayla Wilburn, followed by Larry Verheilig.
Good morning. I'm Kayla Wilburn with EOC Health Services, and I'm here this morning to thank you for your continued support of our senior health screening, 40 Wonderful, and teen academic parenting programs. We provide services to the low-income, uninsured, and underserved population of San Luis Obispo County, and we greatly appreciate all the support that you give us. Also, this year you are the first funders of the Arroyo Grande Clinic remodel, the first local supporters of that project, and that means affordable reproductive health services for the low income of the South County, and we greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Larry Verheilig, followed by Linda Van Fleet.
Yes, good morning again, Chairwoman Bianchi and members of the board. My comments were prior to going into closed session.
Ah.
So.
Excuse me.
I will.
It says closed session.
I should
read the form. Linda Van Fleet, followed by Jill Bolster-White.
Madam Chair and members of the board, my name is Linda Van Fleet, and I work in the County Department of General Services in Real Property Services. One responsibility of our division is to oversee the use and management of the county's community buildings. In that capacity, I am requesting your support for CDBG funding to improve the Shandon Senior Center. The Shandon Senior Center, affectionately known as the Shandon Log Cabin, is located in C.W. Clark Park and houses the Shandon Senior Club and the Senior Nutrition Program. The building is used every weekday for senior nutrition and is also available for rental by the community. During April alone, the building has events scheduled for every weekend, and the rental income goes to the senior club. Events have included birthday celebrations, graduation parties, union meetings, anniversary parties, funeral receptions, and church gatherings. The senior nutrition program occupies the building Monday through Friday for several hours to serve lunch. According to the on-site manager of the program, recent daily attendance averages between 10 and 14 people, although senior nutrition is currently evaluating the program for closure if attendance proves to be too low. It is our hope that improvements to the building could stimulate attendance, but we also feel that other community uses of the building are more than enough justification for investing in it, since it is an essential meeting place for the community. The facility, however, is in severe need of updating, not only cosmetically, but for health and safety issues as well. I have handed the board a packet of photos showing the building and the areas we would propose to renovate. Disabled visitors to the log cabin can currently park in ADA-compliant parking stalls and can enter from an ADA-compliant ramp, but once inside, neither the bathrooms nor the kitchen are compliant. If approved, this project will create one ADA-compliant bathroom and renovate the second bathroom to accommodate storage needs as well. In the kitchen, we would replace cabinets, countertops, and sink. We would also install a hood over the range that currently has none, and we would create an ADA-compliant serving counter. We would redesign the kitchen to create a safer rear exit, which is currently encroached upon by the refrigerator. We would repair dry rot damage, improve plumbing and electrical systems, and replace all the windows with vinyl dual-pane windows. You might say that our request covers everything, including the kitchen sink. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your comments. Jill Bolster-White, followed by Phyllis, and I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name.
Hello, my name is Jill Bolster-White. I'm the director of Transitions Mental Health Association, and I too want to thank the board and the county staff for their support for our transitional housing program for young people disabled by mental illness. We were recommended for receiving home funds for 2005, and that would complete, we hope, the continued renovation of our project and focus on seismic retrofitting, which, as you know, is a pretty critical issue right now. And we expect that this 2005 grant, we hope, will wrap up our project. It's a 1901 house, though, so you never know. And mostly, I just wanted to thank you for your past and current support.
Thank you very much. And Phyllis, and I'm sorry about your last name, followed by Catherine Manning.
That's fine. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak here today.
And your name is?
Phyllis Briotta.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And I'm here on behalf of the Children's Services Network, Economic Opportunity Commission, and as an advocate for the homeless children and families in our county. Through the work I do, I have seen a steady increase in the number of homeless families with children over the past 5 years. I believe it has now reached a crisis level in our county, and what worries me most is the toll homelessness takes on a child's health, mental health, and education, and the stress it creates on families. And I brought a woman with me today named Robin, who is right now living in motel due to emergency situation. She had to flee her home in Southern California and come here with her two teenage sons. Robin is a little shy, so she's not speaking today, but she gave me permission to speak for her, and her situation is not unlike many situations that we handle in our work, and we see women that are fleeing the counties where they live or the cities where they live due to domestic violence. And that is Robin's situation, and we are fortunate enough to be able to help her with a two-week stay in a motel. She was staying at the shelter. I just would like to tell you a little bit about the problems that Robin's children are having, and also that tie in with what I have seen. The teen years are hard enough even when you have a home with your own room for privacy. Can you imagine how painful it is for them to eat, sleep, and shower at a shelter every night with many other adults and children? Can you imagine what it would be like if you were a teenager trying to keep your clothes clean and organized if the only place you have to store them in are plastic trash bags? Can you imagine how hard it is to do your homework when you don't have a quiet place to read, write, or study? And can you imagine living with the stress and fear that somehow your friends at school will find out you're homeless? And that's what Robin's children are going through right now. That may be why the attendance rate is so low for homeless children. For very young children, the effects of not having a consistent daily routine can cause changes in their behavior, making them act out aggressively or becoming extremely withdrawn. It is very hard for them to understand what's happening to them, and they may regress in their development, both emotionally and physically. For children, being homeless can be a traumatic experience. It is so important that we find a way to help our homeless children and families in this county so that every child has a chance to grow up to be an emotionally healthy adult. Please adopt the CON plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Catherine Manning, followed by Lawrence Gibson.
Hi, my name is Catherine Manning, and I work with the Economic Opportunity Commission of San Luis Obispo, California. And I'm here to thank you for your ongoing support for the Prado Day Center and the homeless shelter and other services to the homeless. And I also would like to request that you would continue to support these very necessary and critical services to the poor and low income in our community. I just would like to share with you just some successes. I too also had another female with me that was also camera shy, but she was a single mom with four children that we were able to help at the shelter in the Prado Day Center, and also through case management services, which is very crucial in moving someone from their emergency situation into a residence or schooling, getting their children connected with medical care. But just to give you a little overview, I just wanted to share that the shelter last year saw 845 unduplicated clients for more than 26,000 visits to the site. That averages 90 people a day to the site of the shelter. And the Prado Day Center saw over 1,100 unduplicated clients, and they saw more than they saw an average of 85 people daily to the site. And so probably our greatest success, those are all very, very necessary successes, and the shelter may be difficult. It's not the first place on a visit to this county, but or someone that's here that it's their only choice, because it's very difficult for a family or an individual to have to come to the shelter. No one wants to be there. But we were able in 2004 to house 298 people in the county. And that is representative of 68 families, 124 children, and 97 adults and 77 singles. This to me is a very, very wonderful work that has been able to be accomplished, and it's only done through the partners that we are connected to, the city, the county, private nonprofits, volunteers. The community is very supportive, and some of that is done through TBRA funds. Housing Authority supports is owned by the shelter, and so funds to keep that renovated, functioning, and the TBRA funds are also very, very crucial, including the Echo Shelter in North County. So I want to thank you and encourage your support towards the critical services of the poor and low income in our community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lawrence Gibson, followed by David Royal.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Gibson. I'm here to speak for the shelter and Prado Day Center. I was homeless last year, so I'm a benefactor of this program. We currently have housing, low-income housing through the county, which is a great benefit for me and my children. This program really saved us because we were going to be living out of my car. So I get very emotional when I speak like this. As Catherine knows, I don't think I cried before I was 35, and now I cry all the time. I had a stroke, and I became unable to work or keep a job for a long period of time. And where I was living was very unhelpful. It wasn't working out. And so we basically moved into the car, and I found out about the shelter through social services. And we went and we moved into the shelter, and we got on case management. I spent a lot of time at Prado Day Center, which I would have had nowhere to go. I got the kids in school right away. And I was very thankful for the program, because without their help, we would have been stuck in the car. The kids wouldn't have been in school. There would have been no money or funds to get them there. And now with the housing, it's even better. They go to school all the time. They rarely miss. They love this county. I love this county. I love living here. Next week, I start a program for job retraining, and I hope to become, very successful member of the county. And it would be nice to be able to pay taxes and stuff again. I know a lot of people complain about it this time of year, but I wish I was one of the ones who could pay taxes. I fall well below the minimum. I was looking at the numbers on the thing, and I can remember when I used to be in the median range, and now I'm well below the minimum. And I'm hoping through the job training that I'll be able to become more successful and totally rebound from this whole situation. And I have to thank the shelter and Broadway Day Center for all they've done for me and my family, because this has really given us a chance that I didn't have before. And thank you for your time and your consideration. Thank you.
And thank you for taking the time to come here and speak.
Thank you.
David Ryle, followed by Maureen Forsberg.
Yes, Madam Chair, distinguished board. My name is David Ryle, and I'm the director of the Cuesta College Small Business Development Center. And I think first I'd like to thank the board not only for the support of the Small Business Development Center program and how we work with people in helping them obtain self-employment, but for really the good work and support that you do for all the various organizations that have been addressing you this morning. Over the last 5 years, the Small Business Development Center has assisted in the creation of over 100 jobs through primarily self-employment. In talking with the Veterans Administration yesterday, they're saying that about 1 out of 4 individuals that are exiting the military are looking to self-employment as being the method in which they re-enter the workforce. Through the past number of years, especially since 9/11, self-employment has become a very critical component of the economy, not only of this county, but the United States. And so through the Small Business Development Center, we are working with individuals of the low and medium income level to create employment for themselves, to bring extra tax revenue to the community and get themselves off of whatever public assistance they may be on. We're starting this year a focus with the young entrepreneur because, as we all know, the youth are the future of our economy in the years to come. And so we are working with students and with the youth that want to go into self-employment instead of possibly taking a job in the tourist industry or in the restaurant industry. We're a program that, through your support, allows us to leverage federal funds because we are funded also by the U.S. Small Business Administration, but they require a cash match. In 2003, we lost some of our state funding, and so the support by the county became very, very critical. So again, I'd like to thank you for your support of the economic development work that we do through the Cuesta College Small Business Development Center.
And thank you for your comments. Maureen Forsberg, followed by Doug Davidson.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the board. I am a member of the Human Relations Commission with the City of San Luis Obispo. Our role as this commission is to advise the City Council on issues concerning community needs. We see homelessness as a huge problem facing the City of San Luis Obispo. Affordable housing is a key factor in preventing homelessness. We urge the board to support home funds for first-time home buyers. Thank you.
Thank you. Doug Davidson, followed by, I didn't expect you to be finished quite so soon. Doug Davidson, followed by Mark and your Mariette.
Madam Chair, members of the board, good morning. I'm Doug Davidson, Housing Programs Manager for the City of San Luis Obispo. I'd like to first thank the county staff, particularly Tony Navarro, for all the help this year with the CDBG and the home programs. I'm here on behalf of the city for our request for the home funds to fund our first-time home buyers program, and as has been recommended by your county staff. As you saw in the priorities on the overhead, this is one of the top priorities under the Consolidated Plans Affordable Housing Strategy. It's a big element in our housing element, which was just certified by the state. That's a huge deal for us, the first time in our city's history. We also received one of four awards of merit from HCD. We're very proud of that. One of its main programs is this first-time homebuyer program. It also offers advantages to work with the county or other cities in coming up with an effective way to manage these housing programs. And our urban county framework that we've established with CDBG and Home would be a great starting point. As the staff report states, four, maybe five households would be helped by this grant. Is that a big number? I would say absolutely it is. It's four to five more households than can find affordable housing now. If you're one of those four or five households, it's a big deal. We, all of us here in this county, have a 14% affordability index. 14% of our people can afford to buy a home. Affordable housing's not going to be solved all at once. It's a little bit here, a few units there, and hopefully a few more units over there. You add it all up, and it makes a difference, and that's where these type of home programs come in. We're looking at the big picture of it, not just the funding itself, how this leverages, how it is supplemented by other grants. I already see a big benefit in preparing an application for Prop 46 funding at the state now. We're citing these home funds would be very helpful for our application. These type of federal funds are very important to us, too, because as you know, in the city, we do not have a redevelopment agency, which is where many cities and agencies, the set-aside funding of the RDA is where many communities can fund affordable housing. So again, we are here to appreciate your support of the staff recommendation for the full funding of our home requests for first-time homebuyers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mark, and you'll have to pronounce your last name for me.
Mark Merritt.
Merritt followed by Shirley Getz.
With the Los Osos CSD, I'm the Wastewater Projects Coordinator. I have come here to say hello to the board and thank you for your support. We would also say that we understand that priorities do change from year to year. We understand that. However, there is a strong need for assistance within our community, especially for low-income property owners who are impacted by the escalating price of our wastewater treatment facility. The average hookup right now, based on engineers' estimates and bid opening, which we recently have been trying to resolve, is about $1,600 per property owner. With 30% of the Los Osos Baywood Park community low income or fixed income, there's going to be a real need for assistance. And although we're not applying for a block grant this year, we would like to advise the board that we will be next year pending approval of the project and moving forward with the planned wastewater treatment facility. And I thank you for your time.
And thank you for your comments. And Shirley
Getz, yes.
Followed by Scott. Boy, I'm having trouble this morning. Thank you, Scott.
Good morning to members of the board. My name is Shirley Getz. I'm an Avila Beach resident. This is the block of Avila Beach that was renovated by UNICAL for the cleanup. The people that lived on this block were on a list of names that was given to the county by UNICAL. There's also two blocks to the east that were also completely flattened of all the buildings to make way for the cleanup. There are several businesses and residences that were also on this block. The people on those blocks were on a separate name that was given to the people's self-help housing. We have been waiting and anxious for the project to begin, and many people have asked me, when is it going to become started? When's the building going to begin? Several people feel like we've been forgotten, and a lot of people that were at these homes are now staying with friends or family until the new housing, the affordable housing can be built. And we're hoping that we haven't been forgotten, and we're hoping that the board will adopt the staff report and allocate some funds so that we can move the La Quintera affordable housing project forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Scott?
Figgins Show, good morning, Madam Chair and
members of the board.
Well, actually, that's
what I would have said, but I...
You would have been correct.
Followed by Rachel Richardson.
Great.
Who prints nicely.
Uh-oh.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Scott Figgins Show, and I'm here with People's Self-Help Housing Corporation. And I'm here to, again, encourage your strong support for the staff recommendations as written, in particular for in Exhibit A, items number 5 for the La Cantara Avila Beach Affordable Housing Development, and item 6, the McBride Affordable Housing Development. One of the things that we're often asked is, why does it take so long to finance these affordable housing rental developments and put them together? And one of the reasons is that we have to often come back in multiple years to the home and CDBG programs in order to accumulate enough to actually be able to effectively finance the developments. And so, as you already know, the demand for affordable housing is extremely great, and that these are both projects that have been in the works for several years and are ones that, again, we're pleased with the staff recommendations, and by being funded, we'll be able to move forward and hopefully not have to keep coming back to accumulate more to get them done. One of the things that was mentioned earlier is, again, this risk of the CDBG program cuts, and that is something that I'm glad to know that the board is very concerned about and is fighting hard against, because even though CDBG is one of the sources that can also fund affordable housing, it's not one that we're currently using here because we have a home allocation. However, those resources, if they were not available, would put tremendous stress on the area and other areas as well. So, again, we'd like to strongly recommend your support of the staff recommendations as written, and we look forward to getting these projects done for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Rachel Richardson, followed by Cindy Marie Absey.
People are tall. Good morning. My name is Rachel Richardson. I'm the Housing Services Coordinator for the AIDS Support Network and the current chair of the San Luis Obispo Supportive Housing Consortium. Before I forget, I want to say thank you to Dana Lilly, Tony Navarro, and Ted Bench for all of the technical assistance they provided to the San Luis Obispo Supportive Housing Consortium over the years. They've helped us get to where we are through their hard work. The other thing I want to thank them for is that in their consolidated plan, they made particular efforts to include affordable housing. They took input from all parts of the community, and I think that's very important. I'm here for the recommendations also. Before I get into TBRA, I also want to say that the San Luis Obispo Supportive Housing Consortium supports Transitions Mental Health Association project, as well as the two projects by People Self-Help Housing, because all of three of those projects fit our goal of providing more affordable housing in the community for our people. San Luis Obispo Supportive Housing Consortium is a consortium of about 22 agencies and organizations. Members would include the County Mental Health Department, DSS, two nonprofit builders, People Self-Help Housing, and the Housing Authority's nonprofit arm for building and development. Then we have all of the support services providers like Casa Solana, my agency, Life Steps, throughout the community, many, many services that are provided for low-income special needs clients. TBRA has been a very successful program for housing people who would not otherwise be housed. I mean, literally, these people would not be able to get into housing if it weren't for that program. The Housing Authority is the fiscal agent and guides the clients through their program to get to Section 8 if they qualify. In the last fiscal year, which was July 1 to June 30th, there were 59 families assisted. Of those, there were 48 children under the age of 18. That's how critical this is. Also, there were 42 female head of households, and the number of agencies referring were 12 out of our 22. Obviously, the developers and other people like that don't. My agency doesn't refer people because we have a separate source of funding. I would like to encourage you to go with the staff recommended funding recommendations. I think they've worked hard. They've worked very hard to put things together, and I think they do a good job year after year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Cindy Marie Absey, followed by Jerry Walsh.
Good morning. Cindy Marie Absey, representing the Children's Services Network as Vice Chair and Public Policy Co-Chair wearing a little different hat at this moment. The Children's Services Network has placed as one of its very top priorities the availability of affordable housing in San Luis Obispo County, as we have seen the face of homelessness change over the years from the single male adult to children with families, disabled folks, the elderly, and our very vulnerable populations. And where that really dovetails into what I do mostly 8 to 5 as the victim witness director, is that as these folks are homeless, they're increasingly vulnerable to crime, to child abuse, domestic violence, robbery, assault, and we're seeing that more and more. So on balance, we support the consolidated plan. We are a prevention-focused, solution-focused group, the Children's Services Network, and we have maybe some slight differences of opinion on the continuum of care for the homelessness, but on balance, we do support the plan, and I want to personally thank Tony Navarro for his availability, walking me through some of these issues. Since it isn't really what I do day-to-day, he was very patient with me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jerry Walsh, and then that's my last request to speak form. So if there's anyone else who wishes to speak, please fill out a form and turn it in. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairwoman Bianchi, board and staff. I'm from the unincorporated area of Los Osos, and our community has received very, very little funds over the last 20 years. So I'd like you to consider lending funds for the purchase of Sunny Oaks Mobile Home Park. Some of the residents live in the same little single-wide mobile homes since they have in the 60s. They're in their 80s and 90s. And thanks to the goodness of Joan Fox, the park owner, they're paying $200 or $250 a month space rent. Where else in the county can they go and pay that much rent? Not only the seniors, but there's people in the park who have mental and physical handicaps. I don't think Maurice mentioned that to you. My partner and I in real estate were able to place these people in this mobile home park and help them purchase a mobile home, something to live in, where we couldn't find any place else in the whole county to help them live. And this park is kind of a haven for people in Los Osos to live. I ask you to please support not giving grants, but just lending funds to this purchase of this park so these people can continue to live here, because I don't know where else in the county we're going to be able to place some of these people that live in the park. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I have no other requests to speak forms, so with that, I will close it to the public and bring it back to the board for discussion.
Or a motion? Second.
Boy, that was quick.
He does an excellent job, and I think in the years past we could sit here and bicker back and forth and move, $500 or $200 or $500. But I think when he's gone through the process, he has. Yeah. I know there's areas here I'd like to move some funds to, but I think in a betterment.
And I agree with what's been said by Supervisor Ovid, because our staff very conscientiously work on the funding available to us, and they do an excellent job contributing or taking the money countywide. Everybody gets their fair share, if not this year, the following year. So I personally want to thank you. We're not getting much in my district, but I know in the past we have. Because of that, I'll second the motion with no hesitation.
Yep. No, and I would also like to make the comment that these funds are applied for. They're not just indiscriminately given out. So if there are no applications, the funds don't go there. I would very much like to be able to fund Sunny Oaks. I would, really would. But as I am going to be saying over and over and over, and people get tired of it, government is not like those little plants, the bromeliads that live on air. We need revenue, and if we don't have it, we can't fund it. And it's very difficult because some applications are very, very worthy, such as Sunny Oaks, but if the money isn't there, it just simply isn't there. So with that, we have a motion and a second. Do we really want to have more discussion?
Can I clarify the motion, please?
Move staff approval.
Move as amended today, if the, as amended?
Yes.
Okay.
And Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a comment. I want to thank all of the representatives of the various agencies and organizations that came here today and have participated in this program. I also want to thank staff for the outreach that has been occurring over the past several months to reach out to people in the community that can use these funds to better their condition. And in reading through the staff report and seeing the extent of the outreach that occurred in the process of administering these funds, I was quite impressed and feel quite comfortable with the outreach and the opportunity for people to engage in this program, and it is ongoing, so if you're out there and you didn't make it this time around, there is another opportunity. And again, thank you, Mr. Navarro and Mr. Lilly, for the fine work on this program.
Okay, with that, may we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. That concludes our morning session. It actually, except for closed session, it concludes our day's agenda. However, this is the time for public comment on our closed session items. So, Mr. Verheilig.
Good morning, Chairwoman Bianchi, members of the board. I am Larry Verheilig, and at this time I'm standing as the current president of the Napomo Community Services District. Item A2 in the closed session, I notice, is NCSD and the County of San Luis Obispo. I am here to request that these proceedings go forth with all haste, such that a mutual and mutually satisfactory outcome are the result. I want to call your attention to the settlement conference of March 8th, of which I made some copies here, and if appropriate, would like to have those distributed to the board members after you go into closed session. Read through them. We, NCSD, feel these are pretty benign, and also feel that by working together, we can bring this to a swift and mutually satisfactory outcome. And thank you very much.
Thank you. If you would just like to hand those to Mr. McNulty. Thank you very much. Approximately how long do we believe closed session will take? 15.
You have 10.
Okay, that means we'll be back in about a half an hour. Okay. No. We shall return. The Board of Supervisors has returned from closed session. May we have a report out, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Board met in closed session on the items which were listed on the agenda. The Board did not take any final action on any item. Therefore, no public report is required, and that's the public report. Thank you.
Thank you for the brief comments, and we stand adjourned until next week. Same time, same station.
Same place.
Same place.